After Wall Street's tumble slides in Asian and European markets, this is the Marketplace Morning Report live from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. Fears of recession have gripped global markets after the bond yield curve in the US and UK inverted, meaning investors are getting bigger returns on shorter duration government debt rather than longer dated ones. We'll talk more about that, but first, let's do the numbers. Global stocks are finding more solid footing after Wall Street's worst sell-off this year. Japanese shares ended at their lowest level in 6 months, though there were slight gains on the Chinese and Hong Kong indexes. In Europe, stocks had mostly been higher, but they've turned lower in the last hour after China said promised U.S. tariffs violate a consensus between Donald Trump and Xi Jinping, and that China will take necessary countermeasures. And Hong Kong this hour announced a $2.4 billion economic support package to combat the effects of the U.S.-China trade war and ongoing protests in the city. Also, as worries persist about the long-term strength of the global economy, investors are still piling into government debt. The yield on the benchmark 30-year U.S. Treasury bond briefly fell below 2% for the first time as prices continue to rise. So with whipsawing markets, how worried should investors be? Kathleen Brooks is director of Minerva Analysis.
The bond market was obviously the focus yesterday and people got very worried about it. But actually, bond yields have been falling for most of this year. You know, the US 10-year yield, which was very much in focus yesterday, was 3.2% in November 2018. It now stands at 1.5%. So this kind of strange inversion of the yield curve, which is an unusual move, doesn't necessarily mean there'll be a recession tomorrow, but it does suggest that there is concern about the outlook for the US economy and for the global economy.
So with stocks taking a breather today, what's the next thing that markets will have their eyes on?
Well, I think the next thing will be next weekend's Jackson Hole Central Bankers Conference. We've heard from a lot of central banks, and there has already been loosening of monetary policy from various central banks around the world. What markets are really going to be looking for is if the yield curve is signaling concern in the economy now, and we know there are lots of risk factors out there, both economic and geopolitical, whether or not central bankers will be there to act as a backstop to shore up financial markets, but also these global economies that are seemingly in trouble. The Jackson Hole Conference is an opportunity for the world's biggest central bankers to really instill confidence in financial markets. So that's what traders are going to be looking for next weekend. And we may find that markets calm down as we lead into that meeting. Obviously, if the central bankers don't deliver that confidence, then we could see another sell-off towards the end of August into the start of September.
And let's talk about oil, because the prices continue to tumble. What's going on there?
Yeah, I mean, oil is highly connected to sentiment towards the global economy. So when you've got China, Europe, even the US in some instances looking quite weak all in one time, you are going to get some impact on the oil market. Oil's obviously been up and down quite a lot this week. You know, we saw it fall below $60 at the start of the week, and then it crept up by 4%, and then it fell again on Wednesday. I think the thing to remember with oil is that at the moment there are production cuts by OPEC. So there is another factor that could influence the oil price. So OPEC want to put a floor on the oil price. So if we continue to see the oil price fall, then there is the risk that OPEC could step up and implement even more production cuts, which could just try to support that oil price. So there could be another element of volatility that impacts the oil price going forward.
Kathleen Brooks. Turning to India now, and Prime Minister Narendra Modi has said during his Independence Day speech today that Kashmir will play an important role in the country's development. The disputed region has been under a security and communications lockdown for more than a week. Sushma Ramachandran is an independent journalist.
Kashmir depends largely on two or three economic areas. One is agriculture, one is tourism, and then, of course, there is handicrafts export. There is a very, very small sector that we can call of industries, but very few industries have actually been able to go into the region because of the insurgency and the security problems. Because there's not much revenue from within the state, the economy is largely run from grants which come from the central government.
if you're there, I mean, it's pretty clear that the biggest employer really is the government. There isn't a lot going on in terms of jobs. What is Narendra Modi's plan for Kashmir?
One of the constraints in industry has been that bringing people into the state was a problem because you couldn't buy property. Even the industrialists couldn't buy property to set up his unit. So it was a question of leasing property, and people who wanted to, they wanted people to come and work over there, skilled people, would not come in because they couldn't buy a property to actually live. So that one problem is going to be overcome with the abrogation or rendering ineffective Article 370. The second thing that's important, of course, is infrastructure. And that one major thing is electricity. And I think they're going to make a big drive to improve electricity transmission all over the state. And the third is that the provision, of course, of the basic welfare facilities that are available to Indians in the rest of the country. For instance, you know, free gas supply and the schemes for free homes, the schemes for free electricity. So there are a lot of welfare facilities which were denied to Kashmiris.
But all this depends on security, doesn't it? I mean, this is all a pretty contentious moment for Kashmiris, and there's no guarantee that there will be enough security for all this to happen.
Yes, that's I think, a key issue. I mean, after all, you cannot run an industry, you cannot improve the economy of a country or a region, I would say, if you're going to have it on lockdown all the time. You have to lift the security restrictions, and you have to be confident there will be no terrorist incidents. And I think that the process has to start to win the hearts and minds.
Sushma Ramachandran there. Finally, botanists in New Zealand are warning people not to eat something dubbed sexy pavement lichen, promoted as an alternative to Viagra. The common lichen found on sidewalks and rocks, they say, hasn't been tested for human consumption. I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.